Ruhatsu 2023, next talk. I'm happy to point out to all of you that there is no separation. And you have never been either bereft or deceived. There's been no separation from liberation, or from your mother, or from your heart's desire, or from your biggest failure. There is no separation between you and your most fundamental delusion, our most egregious beliefs. This is the Zen school, and since at least the time of the Vimalakirti Sutra, probably earlier, first century CE, Common Era, there has been this debate about sudden and gradual, that is awakening a recognition that happens moment to moment? Is it a recognition that happens suddenly in the only time there is? Or is it something that gradually unfolds over time? Or is there sudden recognition, sudden realization, and then a gradual unfolding of that realization, or a gradual learning how to mature into that realization, how to function with that realization? Or is it the reverse? And we practice and we stumble and we kind of do all the things that we do, and little by little we grow in maturity, and then at some point we recognize. Hard to say one, hard to say the other. But the recognition that you are not separate and have never been separate, the recognition of that is sudden realization. And it involves investigation. It involves looking directly. So if we think about separation, and we think how much of our life, how much of our problems, how many of our anxieties, worries, despair, how much is based upon separation? Or based upon some fantasy of, I will end the separation. I will end the separation from an inadequate income, and I will get a job and I'll have an adequate income, or I'll get a better house, or I'll get a better car, or I'll get a position, or she loves me not. It's all about separation. I don't have it, I will have it. Or, as we'll talk about in a minute, I have it and I want to get rid of it. We feel inadequate because we feel we're separate from success. We feel broken because we're separate from wholeness. We feel like a failure. We feel incapable. We feel incomplete because we're separate in our mind from the inclusive nature of things, from this thing they keep saying, whole, complete, lacking nothing. In a way, all of our difficulties of our life come from our imagined separation. Now, this is something that is not just a truth, a truism, but it is something that can be looked at directly and investigated right here, right now, in this moment. So, we've got this Buddha on the altar, and the mind says, I am separate from that Buddha. Buddha is up there, I am down here. I am separate from the rain, I am dry, the rain is wet. I am separate from my childhood, that was a long time ago, longer time ago in some cases. And here I am. I am separate from the wholeness, the ease. I'm separate from the confidence. I'm separate from the competence. I'm separate from anything. And if we take just a gross, obvious example of the Buddha on the altar, something that is clearly sitting up there and you are clearly sitting on your seat, and if the Buddha were sitting on you, it'd crush you because it weighs 250 pounds or so. But if we look directly, if we look directly at the experience of the Buddha is on the altar, where is that experience? Where do we experience the sight that there is an image on the altar? Where is it that we experience the knowledge that there is separation? Where is it that we experience the sensation that we think would be different if the Buddha were sitting on us? Reality is one. And our confusion about this fundamental aspect of reality causes endless dukkha. Now, of course, the reverse is also true, just to not leave it out. There are things that we feel we're not separate from that we wish we were. You know, I wish I were separate from the pain in my back. I wish I were separate from that pain in my knee. I wish that the congestion and the pressure in my chest would go somewhere else and not bother me. We all have things that we passionately wish we were separated from and passionately wish that we were not separated from, and both are confusion. Both are confusion. Confusion because we are not looking directly at the nature of our life. We are not separate from breath. Look directly. There is no one in there. There is no homunculus. There is no thing. There is no being. There is no me that is back there that is separate from the breath you are being breathed. The very breath you are being breathed is, so to speak, who you are. The very sight of the Buddha on the altar is who you are. The very pain in your back or your knee, that very pain, that very sensation, which is imminent, which is intimate, which is so close it can't get closer, is our very life itself. You're never separate. But the more we think we are separate, the more we think, oh, I'm alone, and, you know, alone and afraid in the world I never made, and so on and so forth. The more we think that, the more confused we become, the more full of doubt and hesitation we are. If we feel we have lots and lots of problems that are intractable, lots of things that we have not yet been able to see through, the foundation is separation. The foundation is the mistaken belief, the unexamined investigation. And we are left with whatever, loneliness, confusion, not knowing what to do, etc. Confusion, or ignorance, as the Buddhists say, ignorance of the truth of reality is based upon fixed assumptions, fixed beliefs, fixed expectations, presuppositions. And if we boil all that down, I think the simple way to coagulate all of our delusion is, I know how things should be. I know best. I know that if I just got rid of this pain in my back or my knee or my head or my throat or my chest, then I would be so much better, happy, holier. I would be awakened. If I just got rid of it, I know. I know if I just got these people to think about me the way I think they should think about me, then, oh, hallelujah, I would have no stress. My life, I would be free of dukkha. Crazy. I know that if the world just ran according to my principles, then, you know, death and disease would be abandoned. I know that if people would just act sanely according to me, that the world would be so much better place. We would have no problems with carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide or carbon trioxide. We'd have no problems because I know how things should be. I know how the rainforest should be treated. I know how the water should be handled. I know. It's crazy. And we're sitting right here in the Zendo, this group, well-fed, warm, dry, harmonious, and we still have that, well, if it just went according to me, if my mind would just calm down the way I think it should calm down, well, if my breath would just act the way I think it should act, well, if they would just say the things I think they should say, or if I understood the things I think I should understand, then voila, sudden awakening. It's crazy. And if we understand that we're full of ignorance, that's probably more accurate. If we actually understand we don't know, that's much more in line and harmony with reality. So we have the experience of the Buddha on the altar. The experience is imminent. The experience of the sight, or if the Buddha were making sound like the rain, sound is close to home. It's not outside. It's not in the sky. It's close to home. It's imminent, intimate. And we can say that that is experience. If we're to perceive something, it is because we have an experience of it. An experience, and there's many different kinds of senses, but the classic ones that we use just for kind of holding up the idea is seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and then thinking. You know, there's proprioception and balance and other kinds. There's lots of senses, but we'd use those six as sort of markers. All of those senses are experienced close. We are not separate from any experience. There is no one in there experiencing sound. We look and we can't find somebody in there who says, okay, now I'm experiencing the sound, and the sound is out there. We can find lots of thoughts, but we can't find a thinker. We are nothing but experience. Experiencing. experience. No, experience, experiencing, experience. Get the idea. And we can verify that, of course. Where do we feel our hands? We feel our hands in our hands with our hands. We don't feel our hands in our head with some other part. There's not some. So we're looking directly at the experiential, direct understanding. And again, just to pursue this, even though it's obvious, it points to our most fundamental delusion, the origin of the 12-link chain of co-conditioned origination, is separation, is the delusion, I am separate. So you think about, remember parent, any parent. Where do you experience that memory? Where do we experience what we call thought, whatever thought is? Where do we experience the sensations that came from, you know, they dropped me on my head when I was a baby and I still have the vivid sensory experience. Where do we experience that? When do we experience that? We experience it all right now, not in the past. Where do we experience the idea of the past? Right here. Unfindable, of course. Present moment flickers, has no beginning or end, therefore it has no duration. And yet, where do we experience the hopes of awakening? Where do we experience the hopes of freedom? Where do we experience the hopes of loving kindness? Imminent. And unfindable. We can't get away from this now. Even we daydream that we're separated, the daydream is in the moment. This moment contains all things. It's not an obstacle. Sometimes we think that this moment is an obstacle to us getting what we think we really want. I just get beyond this moment. I'll just get through this moment. I'll just get rid of this moment. I'll just transform this moment. I'll just do something with this moment, and then it'll be something else. And then that moment will be the one I'm looking for. But this moment is all we got. It's not an obstacle. It never is separating us. There is no future, because when it arrives, it's this moment. There is no past, because the memory and idea of the past is just this moment. That doesn't mean that as this moment constantly is unfolding and that we're not responding to it, that we're not adjusting and adapting ourselves to this moment. That if the 250-pound Buddha were to fall on us, we would definitely run out of the way in this moment, or roll out of the way, or scootle out of the way, or whatever you want to do. Non-separation is not being a lump. Non-separation is not some immobile, frozen thing. Non-separation is the vivid, alive, intricate responsiveness of the universe to the universe. It is the one constant flickering of cause and effect in this moment. So, the sudden school, or those who talk about awakening as a sudden phenomenon, are simply saying, oh, the recognition is not always happens now. We hear the sound of this frog, and it does not matter what our particular language is. It does not matter what our history has been. That we hear a sensation right here, right now. Except it disappeared. Recognizing the nature of reality at whatever depth we do is an awakening, a waking up, waking up, waking up. Why is it so hard to wake up? Well, in one sense, it isn't because we're always awake. On the other sense, though, it is so hard because we have these fixed beliefs, notions, assumptions, ideas, understandings. We can't find them. If you look at things and think, where is my fixed belief? You can't find a fixed belief. Where is a thought? You can't find a thought. Say, okay, I want to find a thought. I'm going to make my mind really quiet and find a thought. Good luck. I'm going to find a thought, make my mind very thinky. And even then, the thoughts just go flicker, 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 flicker. You can't find them. We have these fixed views, these fixed assumptions, these karmic patterns, these ways of relating based upon our culture, based upon our growth, based upon our whatever, education. And they're unfindable. And yet, they set the stage for how we respond to the variety of input that comes towards us. And the basic assumption, the most basic assumption that we have, the most basic assumption which we are here to actually examine is I am. I am. And of course, I am right. Everybody did what I should think they should do. he, she, or it, or they would act according to my way of being. I know. I know I'd be better off with, I know I'd be better off without, I know I'd be better off with something other. I know. And I have not looked directly, is that true? Is that really true? If we have a fundamental insight into the mystery, the not knowing, the non-origin of things, perhaps we have a great insight, I don't know. But you know, in historically, there have been people who've had great insights where there's no kind of sliding back. But most people talk about having an insight and then having to learn to live it, and had insight and live it, and insight and live it. And so we are constantly having a refreshed insight. We were constantly having sudden understandings, sudden awakenings, with constantly having a slow evolution. There's no shortcut to being 60. If we find ourselves just caught by a really rock-hard assumption about superiority, inferiority, isness, whatever, you know, the four questions, the turnarounds, that whole process of Byron Katie's is extremely, extremely helpful if we can identify what the fixed assumption is. But this is Sesshin. And so here we want to bypass dissecting all the little bits and look directly at the core, look directly at what is underneath it all. And what is underneath it all is, who am I? What am I? What is this? What is always present? What is unborn? What is present before my parents were born? What is it that lives and breathes? What is it that knows? What is it that the very root of separation? I'm here. You're someplace else. Now, if we turn our mind to that sensation of I am, well, first off, when it's unexamined, it's very clear. Oh yeah, I'm giving this talk. And we turn our mind to that sensation of I am. But when we turn our attention to the sensation of I am, and we look at it intimately, it disappears. When we look at it intimately, look at it closely, it disappears. We walk around with this basic assumption, I am moving, I am talking, I am coughing, I am eating, I am. And then we say, well, where is the I am? We turn my mind to it, it disappears. We can't find it. And yet, here we are, still walking and talking and, you know, pontificating and all the things that we do. That is the fundamental koan. That's the fundamental question. It's the fundamental place of inquiry. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, I am sitting right here. And if someone tried to argue me out of it, they would have a very hard time. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, that sound is being made outside, which my mind has lots of labels for. And yet, even though there is absolutely beyond a flicker of doubt, beyond a flicker of questioning, at the same time, it is unfindable. And that is the paradox. That is the fundamental koan, the fundamental inquiry. I am so absolutely certain here I sit with my territory and my body and my clothes and, you know, I can't find it. And yet, I know I can't find it. I know, and yet I can't find it. I know, and turn the mind, and it disappears. And yet I know, and that paradox, knowing, not finding, 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 knowing beyond a shadow of a doubt, and not finding beyond a shadow of a doubt is the fundamental inquiry. What is it that's animating this life? What is it that thinks and hears and feels and moves? So that's what sudden awakening is all about. There you go. Chosen and Fuho both were talking about koans from the related to the Platform Sutra, the Altar Sutra of the Sixth Ancestor. Without going into the details of the histories, it's kind of an interesting history, one of the early Mahayana Sutras. The earliest of the Mahayana Sutras is the Vimalakirti Sutra, the Prajnaparamita Sutras, but this is a sutra that came about in medieval China. And because it is so famous in the Zen school, and we've made mention of it, I'll talk a little bit about the introduction to the sutra. The introduction to the sutra is the ancestor Wei Nang, the sixth ancestor after Bodhidharma in China, basically talking a little bit about his life, his awakening, at least the apocryphal story of that. The whole rest of the sutra, just the whole thing, is just encapsulated in one phrase. Being one with things and wisdom are not two. That's it. No separation, wisdom, voila. So you can avoid reading the rest of the sutra. Samadhi and prajna, not separate. But here's what the introduction, which is always the which certainly used to be my favorite part of the sutra. At one time, the great master arrived at Paolin. Magistrate Wei Chu of Shao Chou and other local officials climbed the mountain and invited the master to come into the city to the lecture hall of the Ta Fan Temple to speak the Dharma to the assembly. When the master, referring to Wei Nang, had taken his seat, the magistrate and over 30 other officials, more than 30 Confucian scholars, and more than 1,000 bhikshus, bhikshunis, Taoists, and lay people, all made obeisance, wishing to hear the essentials of the Dharma. Wei Nang, the great master, said to the assembly, "Good knowing advisors, the self nature of Bodhi is originally clear and pure. Simply use that mind, and you will straightaway accomplish Buddhahood." So, self-nature of Bodhi. Bodhi just means awaken, so awakened nature. But in our experience right here, sitting, breathing, hearing this stream of words, having the sensation of light and body, what is the direct sensation that is originally pure and clear? It is referring, of course, to the unmitigated experience of your own being that is shorn of criticism, that's shorn of if only, that's shorn of all of the other kind of worldly things about if it was just bigger and better and faster and smarter and smoother and easier, that was just shorn of all that, and we are sitting right here in the isness of our lives, pure and clear. You can't see the light better than you can see the light in this moment. It's very clear. You can't see in this moment. You cannot be more, you can't feel your breath better than you feel your breath in this moment. It's very clear. There's only this moment. Anything else is a fantasy. So in what he's just talking about, he's saying, hey guys, gals, people, advisors, everybody, just stop. Pay attention. And then watch that mind respond. Watch that mind respond. And it will respond from some vantage points skillfully and some vantage points unskillfully, but it will always respond. Good knowing advisors, listen while I tell you about the actions and intentions by which Wei Nang obtained the Dharma. Wei Nang's stern father was originally from Fanyang. He was banished to Sin Chao and Lingnan, where he became a commoner. His father soon died. His aging mother was left alone. They moved to Nanhui, poor and in bitter straits. Wei Nang sold wood in the marketplace. And then the piece that Fuho talked about. Once a customer bought firewood and ordered it delivered to his shop, when the delivery was made, Wei Nang had received the money, went outside the gate, and he noticed someone reciting a sutra. Now, you know, the customer may have been a monastery, the customer may have been an official person outside the gate, maybe somebody who was trying to gain merit by reciting the Diamond Sutra, may have been a monk, it may have been, who knows. But the essential thing is there was this meeting, a meeting that was unplanned. You know, he was delivering firewood. There was a meeting, a serendipitous meeting, a spontaneous coming together of causes and conditions, this meeting, and in this meeting, he heard the monk reciting, the way I like the translation, is arouse the mind without it abiding anywhere. Arouse the mind, be alert, don't get stuck. How hard is that? Be alert, don't get stuck. We can't be stuck. I mean, thoughts change, you know, we can't hold on to them, they flicker, they're self-liberating. We can't get stuck. Just be alert. Be alert and know that you're never stuck because it just keeps flickering, it just keeps changing, it just keeps moving through. We have this moment, it has a sensation of depression, this moment has a sensation of fatigue, this moment has a sensation of whatever it is. It just keeps changing. Just be alert. That's all I heard. Be alert. Rouse the mind without it abiding anywhere. Don't get stuck. What's getting stuck? Getting stuck is telling the story over and over and over again. Just don't get stuck. Just don't tell the story. He heard this, and it really deeply impacted him. Now, of course, we have all heard, all of us have heard many, 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 many things. And when there is a meeting of the heart's aspiration and circumstances, sometimes there is a recognition. I mean, we're never separate, but at the same time, the heart's aspiration brings forth the circumstance. And simultaneously, because the world and we are not two different things, the heart's aspiration and the world's response to that aspiration are connected, are one. And the power and the strength and the desire, the passion of the heart's aspiration brings forth a response. Someone who is half-heartedly inquiring, half-heartedly kind of interested in the fundamental nature of mind, gets a half-hearted response from the universe, so to speak. As they say in some another place, great doubt, great awakening, medium doubt, medium waking, no doubt, no awakening. So it is the passionate inquiry. So here's this guy Wei Nang, who apparently was, you know, better off at one point. Father died, living in poverty, reduced to selling firewood. I mean, you can imagine if you had to support yourself by going out into the woods and probably had a pretty crude saw, maybe you didn't have a saw at all, maybe you just had to break branches off. Go out into the woods, break branches off, put them on your back and drag them a few miles into the city to sell them. You might be pretty miserable. Maybe not, but quite possible. And so when we're feeling pretty miserable, the inquiry almost naturally arises. How do I get out of this? How do I get better? How do I see clearly what in the world caused this? Why am I in this horrible situation? That inquiry is fueled. If we're still awake, we're still alive. If our mind has just been beaten down and we're completely dull, it's probably not as exigent. So here's this guy who perhaps had a burning question inside, a burning question about what am I doing here? You know, hauling pieces of wood around for people. And then he heard these words, rouse the mind without it abiding anywhere. Don't get stuck in your story. And he said, well, what are you reading? What are you reciting this from? The Diamond Sutra. And those of you who've been here this fall know we did a whole 10 days on the Diamond Sutra. And the Diamond Sutra basically says two things. The Diamond Sutra says, first off, have the aspiration to help others and to be of service to other people, regardless of what that means. Just have the aspiration and do your best to embody it. And the second piece is that if you look carefully, neither you nor anybody else is a separate entity. And yet, despite not being you nor anybody else being a separate entity, aspire to help. It's the whole Diamond Sutra. Monk said, I come from Tung Chan Monastery in Qichao, Wangmei Province, which I understand is, you know, maybe 1,000 miles away in China. A lot of long distance. And there, the fifth ancestor, the great master Hung Jin, dwells, teaching over 1,000 disciples. I went there to make obeisance and heard and receive the sutra. The great master constantly exhorts the Sangha and laity to only uphold the Diamond Sutra, and then they may see their own nature straight away and achieve Buddhahood. Wei Nang had had his insight, his experience. He heard that there was this teacher who was teaching something that was so essential and fundamental, and he decided to go. And then someone came forward and gave him the money to help support his family while he was gone. Started walking, walked for a month or so. Made obeisance, made prostrations, made bows, made whatever kind of salutations he felt were appropriate for the time to the fifth ancestor. And the fifth ancestor asked him, where are you from? What do you seek? We get asked that question a lot. What do you want? What brings you here? We often should ask our question ourselves, what am I doing here? How did I end up in this situation? Oh my God. Wei Nang replied, your disciple is a commoner from Sin Chao and Ling Nang and comes from afar to bow to the master, seeking only to be a Buddha and nothing else. Seeking only awakening, nothing else. Fifth ancestor says, you're a barbarian. You're from southern China. You're an idiot. You're crude, you're uneducated, you're unformed. How can you be a Buddha? How can you be perfect? And of course, you know, this is a probe. He's not just being derisive. It's actually a probe, saying, okay, here's somebody who I can see a spark there, and so I'll little probe in and see. You know, what's this like? Is he really identified with being a commoner? Is that really kind of who he thinks he is and thinks he's inadequate, and I'll put a probe in and say, yeah, you're just a barbarian, you're just an idiot. What do you have to do with this? Wei Nang, the sixth ancestor, replied, although there are people from the north and people from the south, there's ultimately no north and south in the Buddha nature. The body of the barbarian and that of a high master are not the same, but what distinction is there in the Buddha nature? Fundamentally, we are the same. We are all in the same boat. And the last little piece here, the ancestor wished to continue the conversation, but seeing his disciples gathering on all sides, he ordered his visitor to follow the group off to work. Wei Nang said that this disciple's mind is constantly produces wisdom and is not separate from the self nature. That in itself is a field of blessing. I'll do whatever you think's appropriate. So this fundamental inquiry, who am I? What is it that moves? This fundamental realization that I am not separate, that self is not separate, that everything is my life, that there is nothing that is mine. They go together. Everything is my life and I'm responsible. Nothing is my life and it's just flowing through. They go together. Is the fundamental inquiry of Rohatsu. And the recognition of that is the fundamental realization of the Buddha. And the fundamental realization of the Buddha is non-separation. Non-separation. And he saw all of his past lives. He saw all these karmic relationships. He saw all these things because he was no longer separated from them because they were not a function of language, but a function of isness and beingness to the degree that some ordinary person can understand the Buddha's mind. Non-separation. And this non-separation of staying with our particular practice, our particular method, staying right there with non-separation, it does not matter which quadrant of the coconut you hit, you know, but it will break the coconut. So it does not matter which particular practice you have as long as you have some diligence and faith that right here, right now, is a place of non-separation, is a place of inquiry. So whether you're following your breath at the nostrils, whether you're feeling the whole body, whether you're feeling the whole universe, whether you're working on a koan, you know, scattered mind, simple mind, simple mind, one mind, one mind, no mind. So we'll continue the Platform Sutra a little later. In the meantime, have great confidence. Have great confidence that this level of truth that we're talking about right here is accessible, applicable to you. And it does not matter whether you are 6 feet tall or 3 feet tall, whether you are really smart and have an IQ of 160 or are really dumb and have an IQ of 65. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. All of the things the inner critics say matter don't matter. All the things that the society says matter don't matter. In this essential investigation into reality, you are totally, totally complete, totally, totally equipped, totally, totally confident and competent. So please, have faith and look directly. Look directly.